Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to The Graveyard Shift. The purpose of this podcast is to provide you with some ideas and some inspiration on how to improve your funeral home's operations and how to connect your business with more families. And as always, this podcast is brought to you by Passari. So my name is Todd Carlson, and I'm the Chief Sales Officer with the Directors Investment Group and our family of companies that include Passari, Funeral Directors Life, and ClaimCheck. And, you know, I don't know why, but I continue to be surprised that our cast and our cast of characters continues to return. And sometimes they bring friends like they've done today. So, but as a reminder, we've got Matt Bailey with us from Bailey Family Funeral Homes in Connecticut. And he's the one with the nice hair. Oh, God, Jimmy's got nice hair, too. I don't know. Gary, you and I are out of luck on that. And we've got with us Gary Freitag from Spring Grove in Cincinnati, Ohio, and then Jimmy Lucas from Lucas Funerals and Cremations in Texas. So welcome back, everyone. And Barbara Chemis is with us here today from Cana. And so Barbara is going to share some information today about, you know, topics regarding cremation and some things that we're going to be talking about there with cremation. So I'm really looking forward to this, Barbara. And so, Barbara, thank you for joining us. And why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Cana?
Right. Thanks, Todd. So I'm Barbara Chemis. I'm the executive director of the Cremation Association of North America, which is a mouthful. So we're going to call it Cana from now on. I've been with Cana 14 years this fall, which is crazy to think about. And we are best known for two things, for our research, our annual statistics report, as well as special research that we do on consumer attitudes toward cremation and business practices, and then also crematory operator certifications. So I'm prepared to talk about either, but I think the point is to talk about business trends and cremation trends and benchmarking and what's happening with consumers and cremation, right? So ready to talk.
Well, absolutely. Well, Barbara, I just want to start off by asking, how did you connect with Cana? Because tell us a little bit about where your journey into funeral service.
So I love to tell this story. So I am not a funeral professional. But my family had experience with cremation about 26 years ago. My brother died in an accident in college in a state where none of us lived, and we didn't know what to do. We'd never talked to him about what his plans were. And it was the funeral director who said, "Have you thought about cremation?" And it was a solution for my family of where, what to do, how to take the next breath, how to plan the memorial services and other services that we had to grieve him, but then ultimately a destination scattering service that we did for him. And of course, I'd had a number of pets cremated. So anyway, I was a librarian. I worked in the library association and wanted to be an executive director. And a friend of mine, a mentor of mine who is helping me prepare for that, said, "You have to apply for the most hilarious job posting I've ever seen. You have to do it just to tell me how it goes. The cremation is, can you believe there's an association about cremation?" And so I hadn't had a job interview in 7 years. I completely blew it, the phone interview. The only reason they interviewed me in person was because I was local and they didn't have to spend any money to fly me in. And so I, true story. So I had an 8 a.m. interview and they'd been drinking well into the evening. I saw the bar bill months later after they hired me, the search committee. And so I show up and completely, I'd been traveling during the week from my job. And so showed up and completely forgot my portfolio with my questions and my resumes. And I thought, well, that's par for the course. So I folded my hands, put them on the table, asked the questions I could remember to ask. And about 5 minutes in thought, I am so mad at myself for blowing this. These people are amazing. They love their communities. They love their businesses. They're so thoughtful and engaged. And I want to help them in this association do better. I want to help them create research that helps them grow their businesses. And I just totally blew this. And then they called me about 2 hours after they finished the interviews and offered me the job. So apparently I didn't blow it. So here I am.
Well, that's a great story. That's a great story. I love it. And, yeah, the irony of getting able to see what they did the night before for their prep for the interview too.
Exactly. You know,
that's some good irony there. So, Well, hey, thanks for joining us. You know, you mentioned the CANA's research capabilities and your commitment to researching things around funeral service and specifically cremation. So what would you like to share with our viewers and our listeners about the most recent CANA statistical report that you mentioned?
Right. So our annual report, we do every year, and we publish it late in May. And one thing that I think surprises people, or doesn't surprise people, is that it's hard to come up with a headline every year because the cremation rate continues to increase predictably, steadily, about 1.5%, although it's slowing down because the national cremation rate is 61.8%. And I'm always curious, and so this is leading up to a question for the rest of you. I'm always curious because we gather these statistics from death certificates, right? From offices of vital statistics in every state and province and territory. At least we try to report on the territories. And so we're really confident in the accuracy of the numbers. We gather numbers on all forms of disposition, although we typically just publish cremation. And yet that's the national, the state levels, the provincial levels, yet your businesses are very local, right? Serving primarily counties or cities, you know, generally speaking, what, you know, you're counting a mile radius, right? Or, I mean, radius of service area in miles, not hundreds of miles or in a state level. So we do this, and we've done this ever since CANA began. Originally, the statistics were gathered from our members and how many cremations they performed, but now the source is death certificates. So, and people eagerly await this. Publicly traded companies are always asking for previews before they issue their earnings reports and stuff like that. It's great. I love that our report is so useful, but I'm also always curious to hear how our members use it for their own benchmarking and business planning. So that's the reason we do it. So how do you all use the CANA stats, or do you?
Jimmy.
Barbara, Jimmy Lucas here. Just a question. Do you really think that cremation is going to probably go away one day? Would you say that's probably true?
And when?
Is it going to go up and go down again?
I'm sorry to burst your bubble. It's been almost...
I love the CANA stats. It's one of the many things that I've always loved about CANA, and that, and it's not a small organization, but intimate, the conventions that you guys put on, you and your team. It's an opportunity to really get connected with fellow professionals. But we use that, not only the CANA stats, but then we drill down into not just the county zip code level on using death certificate stats as well. So it is the foremost in cremation stats for our profession. Mm-hmm. Thank you for what y'all do with that, Barbara.
So, Matt, how do you use some of the cremation statistics and some of your own? Well, first of all, let's start with how does CANA's tracking of predictions that cremation is increasing? It's probably the worst kept secret in funeral service right now.
Who knew? But,
Who knew? But so how do you use that information in your business?
Well, I primarily use the numbers from the Cremation Association of South America, but every once in a while, I do like to tap into the Cremation Association of North America's numbers as well. They're both are excellent. I mean, really, you can't pick just one. Really, the way I think that I find myself using the numbers most is when I'm wearing a different hat, which is when I'm a celebrant trainer, when I have the honor of traveling with Glenda Stansberry and training folks who become funeral celebrants. And there is a large portion of that training where we educate people on the purpose and the why behind celebrants and why it's important. And there's two numbers or two fields of research that we rely on a lot for that. And one is the Pew Research Study that talks about the religious nuns, and the other is CANA's with cremation. And they have maps that really align almost identically between the trends that we see with the role of how people identify with faith in America and with the cremation rates as well. So we talk a lot about it because a lot of those families who are choosing cremation are looking for something different. And often they know more of what they don't want than what they do want. So, you know, we want people to understand when they're sitting down and making cremation arrangements, when they talk about what a celebrant is, what a celebrant does, and how it could help a family, that cremation it's relevant to burial families too, obviously, but cremation families in particular. And as we see those trends increase and we talk about how it changes over time, those numbers become very important in putting that story together.
Mm-hmm. Gary, what do you do in some of the, how do you use data in your business to make informed decisions?
Well, we look at the cremation statistics to figure out who we can ignore as a customer. we use it two different ways. One is understanding the dynamics within our market in terms of market share. Are we serving the cremation customer? You know, what's the underlying cremation rate versus our current product mix? It's important at the funeral home, and it's critical for a cemetery, because the biggest challenge for cemeteries is to get in front of the cremation customer. Because in a lot of cases, they walk out of the funeral home and say, well, you don't need a cemetery. Here's a nice urn, go put it on your mantelpiece. The other thing that I've used it for is so I can be psychic. I go to the places with very high cremation rates and figure out what they're doing, and then come back to Cincinnati. Our market has roughly tracked the Cana statistics from the beginning. We've been within a percentage point of what the national average is. Ohio has tracked the Cana statistics as a state. So it's really beneficial for people in markets like mine to go to Oregon or Washington or California or New York or areas where the cremation rate is much, much higher, and look at what the cemeteries and the funeral homes are doing to try to get out in front of the other competitors in our market that aren't able or not interested in doing that.
Yeah. So we talk a lot about the cremation rate, right? And the accuracy of that number and the predictability of that number over time. If you're thinking about this, kind of a question, I think, for the panel here, Barbara, and then we'll circle back to you. But Barbara and I were talking about this yesterday, is other than the percentage of cremations as compared to your total calls handled or family served at your funeral home, what other kind of cremation statistics do you track internally?
Was that to all of us, or was that?
Yes, that's to all of all of you.
I can give you some examples if you'd prefer to answer a multiple choice question,
yeah.
Though. Then
yeah,
let's question. Do
that. Jimmy loves multiple choice.
The answer is C.
Part of the funnest part of my job, my favorite part of the job, is the research. But the most fun part of my job is going around to present at various association meetings, primarily to professionals. Sometimes I get to talk to consumers. Either way, it's great. And so one of the things I always try to do, usually through a show of hands or something like that, not to really pin people down, but to get people thinking. And I'm constantly surprised at how many funeral homes don't track their revenue per call, per cremation call. Some couldn't even tell you how many cremation calls they're doing, because it's gravy. They don't really just count cremation. They count burial, because that's where the real revenue is still. True story. I heard that this week. Okay, that's not old information. Cemeteries I bet Gary tracks this, but cemeteries with crematories sometimes track retention rate, how many of those cremated remains they're actually memorializing in their cemetery. But cemeteries without crematories almost never have, they don't know what the benchmark they should be using to track, because it's not a clear retention rate in that case. It's attraction rate? I'm not sure. So along with, what else are you tracking in addition to those kinds of things?
Well, on that point, Barbara, if we're a cemetery and you don't have a retort, you can get your arms around what percentage of the clientele you're losing. So if you know that the interments in your cemetery are, let's say, 25% cremation and 75% burial, and the underlying cremation rate is 60%, you know you're losing 2/3 of those consumers to, I'll think about it later, to another cemetery. You don't necessarily know where they went, but at least you know, hey, there's a big opportunity there. That's one of the things I talk about at the university, is making sure that you understand what your if you're improving or not improving as your market moves more toward cremation, are you losing a higher or lower percentage of those people that have chosen cremation as opposed to burial?
We really want to just track, especially how many, I mean, Barbara's right about, you know, average revenue per call, burial versus cremation overall. I'm always really interested in services and who is doing something with us, whether it's a visitation for a couple hours, whether it's a memorial service, whether it's a graveside, but who is still having a chance for people to say goodbye, that they're working on that with our team. That's big.
It's a very important statistic. And you want to see that over time, right? You know, is it getting better or worse? And yeah, because it's, you know, that's a great one. That's Bart and I are brainstorming this percentage of the, you use the funeral home versus using doing it themselves. The percent of directs versus non-direct cremations, exactly. Right?
Right.
You know, because and that's a big one. I think many funeral directors aren't, you know, they're, you know, sadly, and I think Barbara, you hear that some funeral homes actually are relieved sometimes when they have a direct cremation. Because it gets a break, give them a break.
Well, so yeah, exactly. So, well, two things related to that. First, that's a question Kena Research can't really answer, is direct cremation versus cremation with service, because our source data is death certificates. So that's not recorded whether a service took place. But I have some insight into that with a mistake we made. We did some focus group research about the cremation experience in 2019. And that focus group research really was targeted on leading age baby boomer women, which my mother loved that term because that's the oldest portion of the generation, kind of young silent generation, older baby boomers. And what they did, and for most of the women in these focus groups, it turned out cremation, planning a cremation was the first time they'd done so, but they talked about the first experience, but some of them had multiple times. But whenever you do focus groups, you work with, you pick the locations, you find a local company, they invite and fill the room, right, with focus group participants. And so you have to tell them what you want, the demographics, but then also what are the kind of disqualifying or qualifying features. So we told them we want two groups. In each of the cities we chose, we wanted people who chose cremation and did nothing. And we want people who chose cremation and did services, right? And usually they get back to you in a little bit and then here's your list and here's who's coming and we've got some alternates and blah, blah, blah. They got back to us within like 48 hours and said, we can't fill the first group. We can't find anybody who chose cremation and did nothing, because we made the mistake and didn't say, chose cremation and did nothing with the funeral provider or the cemetery. We just said did nothing. And that was, so even before we had the focus groups and got the, you know, the responses from the participants, we had an important insight that we think professionals, including myself, even though I'm not a funeral director, were mistakenly think that direct cremation means do nothing, when really it's DIY. We're forcing,
yeah,
for direct cremation sales, often assume that people are going to do it themselves. And that's fine. My family is a DIYer. They're your nightmare, basically. My family is your nightmare. They scatter illegally. They dodge, you know, park rangers to scatter in places they know they shouldn't. They wait decades to do anything. You know, we're the, in some ways, the typical, you know, consumer, but I know better now. I know that there are professionals who can help us. We don't have to suffer through this. And too many consumers think that, nope, direct cremation is the cheapest. It's the smartest. I have to do it myself. It's all good. And we still think that that's a very small percentage and of families. But we don't have the research to prove that. And then I'll let you respond to that. But what Todd was referring to is there's a staffing shortage in our profession, right? It's really hard to find licensees in particular, but really anyone qualified and willing to work, whether it's in a crematory, a cemetery, a funeral home, all levels, whether a licensee or not. And I've heard from more than a dozen in my travels and conversations with Kena members, more than a dozen business owners who are basically at some point in the month, they just stop selling services. They don't have the staff for it. They don't have the space for it. And that's what Todd was referring to, like, you know, direct cremation. At a certain point, they're pushing services off because of staffing shortages to a point that nobody wants to wait 3 weeks to have their service. So if it's a cremation consumer, they're just like, great, here's our direct cremation information. And they're not, even though they know they could and should offer services, they don't have the capacity to do so. And so that is, we're definitely going to explore that more with research to see if that's a
really. Yeah, I think training is a big part of that, like how you're staying on top. And I think not only I would encourage folks that if you're not tracking your percentage of direct cremations to your total cremations, that you're also looking at, if you have an active pre-arrangement program, tracking cremation sales as a percentage of your pre-needs so you can forecast what you got coming your way. And if you want to get really, really into it, we track urns and containers. Just when you start talking about revenue per call and you're like, how can we make minor adjustments in order to facilitate what's next? And are we giving every family every option every time? And then you can train on that. So I agree with you, Barbara. It's not if a family is going to have a ceremony, it's who are they going to have it with and where are they going to have
it.
So Barbara, one thing as we were visiting about things here with the podcast, you said something that really stuck with me. And you said, you just said flat out, you said cremation families are harder.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So what, I think we should unpack that a little bit, because the question is, if they're harder, then why are they worth serving? And what can we learn from serving cremation families? So why don't you just kind of share with the group a little bit about your thought process on the fact that cremation families might be harder to work with and why they're harder. And then we can talk about what we do about that. Okay. And so Jimmy, that was a good prompt there on the funeral director training side of that. So you just,
you're welcome.
Brilliant. So I'll make my case of why I think they're harder. And then I'll cheerfully be corrected by the rest of you, because you figured out how to work with these so-called hard customers. Consumers choosing cremation are not unicorns. They're not hard in that sense, that they're unpredictable and rarely seen. And, you know, you just so foreign that you don't know how to serve them. They're harder because often they're choosing cremation in opposition to a bad experience, or they're being told by the person, sometimes, you know, in hospice or in writing after the death, I want cremation. And when it's the first cremation that a family does, they don't know how to do it, right? And they think based on pop culture or word of mouth, they know what cremation is, and they come in maybe with some ideas, and maybe they're really adamant about what they think they know about cremation. But our research and interviews, focus groups and online surveys and other research with consumers is validated by other groups that do this research. They're hungry for education about what cremation can be. And so I keep referencing this focus group research we did in 2019, and I hope we do it again soon, because I think education is changing, right? People, once you do it once, you have one experience, and then you can build on that, or you can do things differently. And so the reason I really say that cremation families are harder for funeral professionals is it's harder to develop something from scratch, right? Of course, the solution is a celebrant. Of course, a celebrant service that's highly personalized. But if you're not coming with a liturgy or a religious tradition or something that you know and is tried and true in the family tradition, you're creating a new tradition with a funeral director. It's harder, right? It's just harder. All right. Correct me.
I have a question that made me think that when I visit with a cremation family and then I throw out the stat that, because they're like, we want cremation, almost like, is that okay? But most of them don't realize, like, over half the population is choosing cremation. When I tell a family, in last year in Fort Worth, of all the people that passed away, 63.5% of the people chose cremation. People are like, they did? And so it's
63.7, Jimmy.
6.5.
We'll double check
it. And so I think it's an epiphany for some of these first generation cremations families. It's like, while we all know the stats, it's like, oh, so it's not a weird thing we're doing. This is, and I think it's an epiphany moment for a lot of people that are choosing cremation. I don't know how you guys, if y'all see that.
So Gary, what are your thoughts on this idea of cremation families are harder when you're working with your leadership to and your funeral directors? You know, what kind of advice and guidance do you provide your ground level people?
Well, first of all, Barbara's absolutely accurate. I'm not going to correct her. They are more difficult because I think I've mentioned this before, but if you work in a community that's 95% Catholic and you're a funeral director, after 6 months, you can do those services in your sleep, right? You know, how long the priest is going to talk, you know, when the casket has to be there, how long they're going to be graveside, because it's a traditional service and people find comfort in that. There's nothing wrong with it. When you convert to a cremation customer, you're adding a whole bunch of other variables, right? Now they want to customize this. They want to have a theme. They want to do this, that, the other thing that you've never tried before, as she was saying, creating stuff from scratch and managing those variables is infinitely more complex than the prior service I just talked about. So the first thing we do is let the frontline people know it's okay if something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We need to continue stretching, right? Innovating, coming up with new things that are meaningful to the family. And every once in a while, it's going to blow up in your face, and that's okay. So that they have the reassurance that if the dove release, you know, I think I've talked about this before. We've had red-tailed hawks blow up doves right as you release them, right? And feathers come down on the attendants of the funeral. You have to navigate your way through that because something is going to go wrong, right? And the other thing that we focused on as an organization is, and I think this is Batesville research, and I'm not sure exactly what year, but that the event space, the facilities, are three times as important to a cremation customer as they are to a burial customer because there's no body to look at. So we've spent a lot of money improving the facilities and providing reception areas and things like that for cremation customers because that's much more important to them than some of the more traditional things that we have focused on as a profession.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of giving the ability for those folks to fail and then also giving them the venue that they can really do a creative service and not within your own organization. So that's been a sort of a two-pronged approach for us.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Matt, I'd love to get your insight because you alluded to something a little earlier. We talked about the religious nuns, right? Those who report that they have no religious preference at all. And so you take the decoupling of the religious tradition from the funeral experience, right? So, which then it takes your autopilot that you've operated as a funeral director under that Gary mentioned, and you remove that. And then the question becomes, and what do we do? You know, so why don't you talk a little bit about your experiences with the funeral celebrant programs and dealing with families who don't have a religious tradition and they know what they don't want, but they don't always know what they want and how that plays itself out in your funeral home.
You know, I think, it's an interesting thing because in some ways for many years, this has been happening, obviously, and I think it almost created a perfect storm for us that led to a lot of the problems that we actually have today. Because we had families that were walking in and they were not from a particular background. They would say, you know, we don't really go to church. It's not who we are. It's not our experience. And the funeral director would be like, it's okay. I got a guy. And they would go to their Rolodex and have Reverend Rolodex, who does a pretty good job. He does a pretty good job and he's kind of a religious light, you know, he's not overly religious. So, you know, I got a guy, but it still was trying to put a square peg in a round hole. It wasn't what this family wanted. They weren't looking for hymns. They weren't looking for psalms. They wanted the person's story told. So they walked out the door from that experience, which did not speak to them and they did not want, and they said, we'll never do this again. And then the friends of the person in the room who had the same mindset and same worldview walked out the door and said, when I go, just cremate me. And that's the instructions that their family got. And then today we walk in and they walk in and they say, we got it. We got the rest. We got a guy. We got it on our own. Don't worry. We're just going to do the cremation. If, you know, 20 years ago, we weren't, and 20 minutes ago and this afternoon, not pulling out Reverend Rolodex and still trying to force that pattern, I think we would be in a different situation right now. And the challenge for us is that in the moment, it's a hard time to educate some people. Some people are willing to listen to us and get educated in an at-need situation, and they will think, and you can explain, and you could tell them what different options are and how you could help them with that. But some are walking in so much with their guard up that they're not going to listen to it. Or they got instructions from their loved one, as Barbara mentioned, where it was either written down on hospice or something like that. And they said, I want to be cremated. And in the person's mind, that's what they thought the only thing they needed to tell. They never said anything about a period to gather. They never said about a service to remember them. They never said anything about permanent memorialization, where they want to be placed, where they want to be spread, if they want an urn, if they don't, or any of those things. And because they didn't clarify it, the hearer heard cremation and nothing else. And like, well, I don't want to go against her wishes, because all she told me was that she wanted to be cremated. So we're just going to do the cremation. We're not going to have 2 or 3 hours where we get together and share stories and memories. So I think that, you know, we need to do a better job every chance we get telling people what their options are. So when you have that traditional Catholic family that Gary talked about in his market that's coming in, and they're going to bring mom to church because she went to daily mass every single day for 30 years. Of course, they're going to give her that funeral. But her three boys have not been to church since Kennedy was shot. You know, they're never going to go back to, you know, to church again. It does not speak to them. That funeral director needs to be saying, I get it. We have a lot of people saying the same thing. This is right for your mom. And for people like you, we have this reception center. For people like you, we have a certified celebrant that will sit down with their family, collect the stories, put together something unique and custom that really helps highlight, you know, what made your life special and different. That's, I have found in business after hours and happy hours and things like that, just having those conversations with people where you paint a picture of what it could look like. You could convert people ahead of time if we're having those conversations and we're educating them about it.
Yeah.
One thing just to add quickly to Matt's comment.
There's nothing to add, Gary.
Yes, there is.
I nailed it.
But I'm stealing Gober's comment. But one of the things I don't think we do well as a profession is understanding that you've got people at that service that aren't grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you can customize and make that meaningful and have those people walk out, you know, I go to a funeral because Jim's dad died. I've never met his father. I know Jim really well. I'm there to support Jim, but I don't know his father. You want that person to walk out of that service saying, I now know who Jim's father was.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that will do a better job of educating the public than being in the than explaining to it in the arrangement room to the person that's grieving. The more customized services you can do, you're showing the other 150 or 200 people, hey, wait a minute. A funeral doesn't mean that traditional Catholic service, because I've talked to a lot of people. They say, well, I don't want a funeral. They want to have a service. They're going to do something. It's just, they don't want that traditional service.
Yeah.
Just what Matt was talking about with the three boys who haven't been to church. So I think the more you can do that, the more you set the example and you plant the seeds in people's heads. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I can do something different. I think Barbara had something to say.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to thank you for sharing that so eloquently, because I think that's, all of those are solutions to work hard about. You don't accept compliments well, but I'm still going to give them. no, but all of
those. I disagree. I think I accept compliments wonderfully.
All of those are solutions to, but there's another aspect that I want to throw in about why cremation customers are hard. And I think, you know, Matt, you just basically described my family. And I tell the story often when I present that my, you know, my father was literally wrote just cremate me in block letters at the bottom of his direct cremation contract that he signed with the Cana member 7 years prior to his death. And when he died and my mom and I sat in the arrangement room, the funeral director opened the folder and I could see his handwriting at the bottom. And when he showed me that as he was prearranging for my mom and he said, that's all I want. I don't want anyone to see me when I'm dead. I don't want you to grieve me. No service. I said, whoa, 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 Dad. He's the introvert. I'm the extrovert, right? I'm going to grieve you. I mean, I don't know who said it, but isn't grief equal to love, right? As much as I love him, yeah, that's how I'm going to grieve him, right? And so there's no short-circuiting that. Cremation isn't going to cause me to not grieve him. I'm still grieving him to this day. But please give my mother and me, the extrovert from the family, an opportunity to talk to people and share your silly stories and corny jokes and terrible music taste and all of those things, right? Like let us have that time. And he's like, okay, as long as I'm not embalmed and nobody looks at me, then you can do what you want to do. Meanwhile, my mother, who'd also signed her direct cremation thing, she's alive, but she is going to be at the church. She's going to be at the funeral home because her Southern Baptist friends won't go to the Lutheran church. She's going to do this and that. And all of these things are laid out. Does the funeral director know any of this? No, it's all in my head, right? It's all in her head and it's evolving over time. So when my father died and we went in and the funeral director opened that folder and he said, here's our updated general price list for you to keep. And this is what you've arranged and what's included in that. And what are you thinking? And he got really quiet. And my mom said, well, we're going to serve carrot cake and sweet tea. And the pastor's going to speak and my daughter's going to speak. And we love the new renovation you did. It looks, you know, this was several years ago, but it was like, it looked like, you know, Chip and Joanna Gaines had renovated or decorated this funeral home. It was just her taste. She loved it. And so it's probably changed again since then, but it was beautiful and updated and 300 people and thousands of dollars later, that direct cremation became an extremely meaningful service that we still talk about as a joyful reminder of our father to this day. And so my mom still signed up for a direct cremation. And I hope that funeral director, when I sit down with them, listens to me about how we're going to celebrate her life. But I hope that story shows another part of the difficulty that, and it relates to pre-need and at-need, that they're thinking disposition. They're thinking just cremate me. Give them some silence and some time to talk about a service. Great. We created a service, but you know what I regret? I never talked to my father about what he wanted done with his ashes, right? I never talked to him about it. So my mom and I are talking about that now. And we have this concept that I often use and promote called 5-15-50. So 5 years after death, mom, what do you want? Well, my dad's been dead for more than 5 years and he's in a beautiful urn. He moved from the living room to the bedroom because she got a new lazy boy recliner and there wasn't room for him on the side table anymore. So now he's in the bedroom, but she still talks to him every day. Okay. All right. In 15 years, mom, you know, when you're gone, well, we're moving in with you. Of course, you get to decide where we're going to go. We're moving in with you on your non-existent mantle. And so, okay, yeah. What about in 50 years when I'm not around, right? This decision is still mine in my mom's case. But somehow, if, you know, make that your own, whatever numbers you want to do. But I think that's a way to frame the conversation because, of course, at need, it's the last thing we want to think about, right? But we got to think about it because that's really what makes cremation hard and really, really, really hard for cemeteries, right? Is we can skip the cemetery for some period of time. And then how do you get them back? Just like you said, Gary. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. So I think part of the, you know, I'm going to throw this idea out because I was thinking about this, Barbara, since we spoke about this, is maybe what part of the reason that it feels harder is the disconnect between what families are thinking, what the funeral directors are assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so I wanted to spend a little bit of time with our panel exploring this idea of the disconnects that they see, because I've got a couple good ones in the pocket here if we need to bring them up, but the disconnects between what they think what a funeral director might be thinking when the word cremation comes up and what families are thinking when they mention cremation. So I'd like to throw that out to the panel and just say, what kind of disconnects do you think? Because a Passari study that we did, that you're aware of, Barbara, we had some really clear disconnects emerge from that. But I want to get the panel's input too on those disconnects, Barbara. Well, we're going to play Stump the Chump with them and then we'll get our opinion in. So
that won't be hard to do.
No, I need multiple choice.
So, Barbara, first, C.S. Lewis was also contributed to the capacity of love and the ability of grief connection. He was one of those. Matt, you were trying to make a point earlier, and could you start over with that?
Yes, I was just trying to ask Barbara, who is the worst board member she's ever been responsible for at Cana, and why is it Jimmy Lucas?
Okay, you're outing Jimmy as a board member of Cana.
Oh my God, that just went south.
The worst.
Man.
Spoken as a future board member of Cana, Matt.
Careful.
We'll see.
I think on assumptions, Todd, and disconnect. And again, I'm stealing a line from my friend Glenda here, but she said that if she could get one word out of the lexicon of funeral service, it's justa. Mm. And there's a lot of funeral directors. We got a call overnight. It's just a cremation. It's justa. And she's like, we got to get that out of our mind, because when you walk in the arrangement conference and you're already thinking it's just a cremation, you're already planting how you're going to talk to that family and putting assumptions on them that there will not be a viewing, that there will not be a ceremony prior, that there will not be a ceremony after, that there will not be permanent memorialization, that there will not be, you know, whatever it may be. And I think, and that goes back to arranger training, which I know is a thing that I hear a lot of people talking about on a regular basis about how important that is. But I definitely think there's a disconnect. One other thing I would just mention too, and when, you know, Barbara's telling the story about, you know, the block letters and stuff like that, one of the things that I recommended to directors on the pre-need setting is when they have that family, or particularly couples, a lot of time that come in and say, we're doing nothing, of inviting them to consider signing a letter to their family saying that if you feel that for your own grief and your own healing journey, you need to vary this plan, I allow you to do so. And because I'll ask them, I'll say, if you feel that you're, you know, you think this is fine right now, but we don't know what the circumstances are going to be. If you have a kid who's out of the country, who's out of state, who doesn't get to say goodbye, who really feels like they need to see you, like, would you let that person make a change in order to ensure that he or she is able to start a healing path? And 9 out of 10 times, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I mean, they have to, if they want to. And then say, here's a letter that you could say to your family, that you, as an act of love, you wanted to put things together in order for them ahead of time. You wanted to make sure it's paid for. You covered a simple, basic option. If they want to do other things or they need other things, they have your blessing to do so. So when the kids come in and they say, well, what do you mean we're not going to have a visitation? What do you mean we're not going to have a funeral? What do you mean? Like, it's not that argument we always hear. Well, that's not what she wanted, and we can't do it. We have to respect her wishes. So
that's a really good idea.
Terminology. We that's created brilliant. Direct cremation, and the word direct cremation as a funeral profession. And I think getting out of our way when someone says, we just want a cremation, said, so, well, that we can do. Now let's talk about the healing steps where we can gather, remember, and tell a story. Yeah. And it's what's next. It's not just that. It's and then. And I think it's, I don't want to say laziness. I think we just get caught in a rut sometimes in the arrangement conference room. And I don't know how it's an aha moment when we're serving 63.5% of the families who are choosing cremations. So it's a constant. It's not just we did an arranger training. It's like we're doing an arranger training again and again and again. And you track your cremation and your percentage of not just direct cremation, but cremation with services.
I do a lot of speaking, mortuary colleges and other places. They're actually more accurate with their numbers than the, we'll say that my contemporaries, let's just say it that way. I'm not going to say we're the old guard, but, you know, we asked this question, how long do you think of when a family is expecting to have between, how many days do you expect a family to want between the date of death and the date of funeral? What do you think most funeral directors say?
Three to four,
you know, the most accurate thing I heard a funeral director say was whatever a week from this Saturday is. That was pretty close. But the disconnect there is the consumer on average is thinking they have 12.7 days to plan a funeral, right?
12.7.
And so that makes it difficult because, you know, you guys, you know, Jimmy and Matt and Gary are all thinking, well, who's going to be on call and working 12.7 days from now, you know, to follow this plan out, right? And Barbara, you got something to say?
We needed a month to plan my father's funeral because we had people from all over the country, and actually cousins from out of the country who wanted to come. And so in order to get reasonable airfares to come and gather and do this, we did that. So, I mean, I was with my mom when he died. So there was this immediacy and we saw him and had, I mean, had our time, I suppose, but it wasn't a service. But then we needed a month to gather everybody. So yeah, it wouldn't have worked in a few days for us. That's interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting.
But if we have that mindset that, you know, things are supposed to take less than a week or it screws up my life as a funeral planner, you know, that's a tough perspective to be starting from with a cremation family. And another one I'm going to throw out there is in my work with funeral directors on this topic is if I ask the question, what percent of families when they use the word cremation are thinking about a service? Ask them to look at it from the family's perspective. They usually generally say somewhere around 25% to maybe a third. And the Pasari data shows it's actually the opposite ratio. A solid, when we ask the question, how necessary with cremation is some kind of a funeral, a memorial service or celebration of life ceremony? About two-thirds of the family are calling that essential, and only 14% say it's unessential, that it's not important. So those are, you know, those mindsets drive the way that we behave with families. And so one thing I wanted to ask here, kind of our last question here, Barbara, and then we'll wrap up, is you shared with me what you, when a funeral director, and neither, you know, I haven't met with a family to make a funeral arrangement since 1994, in full disclosure, right? I haven't embalmed a body since, 2006. So been a while for me, Barbara. You're a librarian, you know, and you work very closely. But what we get to do is leverage other people's stories, right? Funeral service professional stories. So we can do that here. But in your visiting with families, you shared with me when a family comes into an arrangement conference, especially at need, you shared me what you believe the first question a funeral director should ask that family. And what's your thoughts on that?
So let me take a half step back and say, as a librarian, one of the truths I learned in graduate school was that framing questions is one of the most important things you can do. And the truth is that the first question someone asks is not the question they really want answered. The first question somebody asks walking up to a reference desk, picking up the phone or something, builds a rapport. Does this person know what, listening to me, taking the time? Can I trust them? Are they going to help me understand and get to where exactly I want to be? It's true in a library. It's true in an arrangement room. It's true on the phone for a first call. And so also the first question a funeral director asks is critical. And so I'm previewing some research that we're debuting later in August, but we did some research of funeral directors and funeral arrangers and asked them, one of the questions was, what are the first questions you ask? It was a multiple choice question. And the options were demographics, were disposition, were, right? I mean, you're all ringers here. So you're shaking your heads. No, that's not what to do.
Your mother's maiden name is the correct answer.
How many death certificates do you need?
Exactly. How are those? All of those are so critical, but often the first question is something like, will it be cremation or burial? Right. If that hasn't come up already. And the epiphany that I had, because I was disgusted by that, because that's not what a consumer wants to answer. The correct answer is, tell me about your person, right? Tell me about your person.
Yep.
Talk to me. I want to hear about this person. And then let's go there. Let's assume service first and then worry about disposition, treatment of the body later. But too often, it's a very practical reason why cremation or burial is asked first, because, hey, do I have room in my cooler? If I even have refrigeration, do I need to schedule embalming for this person if I take them into my care, right? Like, that's what's behind the cremation, the practical reason behind the cremation or burial question. Consumer doesn't know that. And it's not the first thing they want to be thinking of. So I challenge everybody listening to this, if that's the first question you ask or some variation, please stop immediately.
Please stop. I mean, yes.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah,
and it's easy. It's like, Miss Bailey, I didn't know Mr. Bailey. Would you mind taking some time to help me get to know him?
Yes.
And then it just flows. Once you can get people to talk about them and their story down to, were you there when he passed away? And like that, man, somebody said that families don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
There you go.
Excellent. Well, that's some great advice, Barbara. So, hey, I just wanted to say this, you know, that I think this content's been really helpful, Barbara. So thank you for sharing. And, you know, I love to see our panel and their heads nodding in agreement. And, you know, I really hope that some of this content can help our funeral directors and funeral arrangers out there take care of families better. Like I always count on Matt to go if I say yes, he's shaking his head no, just because. I thank you for joining us. And I just want to say this, if the funeral professionals that are out there and listening to this, I think you've heard the heart of Barbara in this visit. I think you've heard maybe the heart of Cana in this. I think a lot of people may have assumed that Cana was the pro cremation. No, it's really just pro education, right? You know, it's cremation education. And with that education, we can serve families better. So I encourage people to get involved with your organization, because I think there's a lot that can be learned and shared. And so we can make our experiences in serving families deeper and better and more meaningful for them and us. So I want to say this, we have come to our end of our time together. Thank you so much, Barbara. Thank you to our panel for all of their insight and their take on this. I hope everyone enjoyed this visit today. I know I did. And I want to remind our listeners to do this, to take something you learned today. There's a lot of nuggets in this session today, in this episode, is take what you've learned and put something to work. Try something new. Stop asking that question. Ask the right question. Tell me about Mom. And then we'll take it from there. So go ahead and put something to work. And again, don't keep us a secret. If you got some comments, email us at thegraveyardshift@passari.com and like, share, subscribe, and all those fun things to our podcast. And don't keep us a secret. With that, everyone.
And Todd.
But yes, Jimmy.
And Todd, just if you're looking for just an okay guy, call Matt Bailey.
All right. So, exactly. Well, hey, everyone, thank you so much again. You have a great rest of your time as you're serving families this week. Again, thank you, Barbara.